Okay, great to see you, Paul, Gloria, Arthur. I presume Bubby and Zadie over there behind the Raskin screen, and looks like Melissa as well. And more joining in. Welcome, Toby. Good to see you. And let's start. We find ourselves on Chaf Amud Aleph. We are on 20A. And what we're going to do is, well, you don't need to worry, except for one little section here. It's not going to be like last time where we were ping-ponging back and forth. The concepts in here, there's going to be some maybe unfamiliar concepts, but things that I think we could clear up. We're going to learn some what you call yedios klalios, general concepts that come up in the Gemara and Halacha. And I think it'll be a very edifying Gemara session for us. In particular, what I'm really excited to talk about, even though I am very, very, very far from an expert on it, is Zmanim. We're going to talk about what is morning, what is evening. We're going to talk about when does the day begin and the day end, and for a number of halachos. But before we get to talking about mitzvos that are done, particularly during the daytime, we're just going to wrap up a little bit from what we learned last time. But don't worry, you don't have to remember the whole ping pong fest that we had, the whole Shock Vitaria. This is a new section. So if you look, it's about a quarter way down on 20A on Chaf Amud Aleph. And it's Rabbi Huda Machshir B'Katan. It's a quote from the Mishnah. So I'm sure in Art Scroll, if you're following along in that, it's pretty easily identifiable because there's a break. There should be a break in the page saying something to the effect of, we will now analyze the end of the Mishnah, something like that. So Rabbi Yehuda Machshir B'Katan, we learned at the end of the previous Mishnah, we learned last week, that Rabbi Yehuda says that a katan shehigia lechinach, that a child who's already reached a stage of education, which, by the way, for I know some of you are Monday night halacha folks, and we talked about children in shul, and it was very relevant talking about the mitzvah of chinach. So a child who is old enough that he is at the stage of chinach, the stage of education. And again, there's a whole load of opinions on there. I believe Rashi in our Gemara said, Kagon ben Teisha u ben Asar. I found out pretty quickly because I underlined it. So about 9 or 10 years old. So here we go. Ditanya, all right, Huda, Katan ha'yisi karitza l'mam e'rabi tarfum v'zkenim belud. Rabbi Huda says, I was a child and I leaned Megillah. And nobody complained about it. I leaned in front of these very prestigious, preeminent rabbis, and they didn't seem to complain that a child was leaning the Megillah. So it must be for what we say in Halakha many times is shtika kehodah, that when one is silent, that means they are complicit. This is more of a positive. It means that they acknowledge that they agree with what is being done. Amrulo, aim of Ian Ryan in a katan. You can't bring a proof from a katan. What does that mean? So, in general, a child cannot testify in a Jewish court. They're pasul edus. They're disqualified. They don't, or rather, they don't even qualify to begin with. So, the chiddush here, what's teaching us that I would not have known otherwise is, I would think, true, he witnessed this when he was a child, but now he's an adult. Now he is a legitimate, valid witness in court. Nonetheless, since he saw it as a child, it's perhaps he didn't fully understand what was going on. Maybe they weren't really being Yotzei Megillah from him. Maybe they're just like, oh, little Yehudalah is going to lay in the Megillah, so we'll indulge him. We don't really know what was going on then. So even though he's an adult now, he's not able to testify on something that occurred to him when he was not yet an adult. In a similar vein, another Bryce said, Tanya, I'm a Rebbe. Katan karitza mami Rabbi Yehuda. I was a katan and I read the Megillah in front of Rabbi Yehuda. So the question is, so Amarlo, ein mevin raya min hamatir. So shkoyach that Rabbi Yehuda permitted a child to read, but that's not a proof for anything because Rabbi Yehuda is the one, he is that minority opinion who approves of children laying Megillah for adults. You can't bring a proof from the guy who is the Shita Smad. We're trying to find people who can corroborate the lenient opinion. You got to bring a proof from the actual guy himself who suggested it. We need other Rabbanim to sign on to it. The Gemara asks, why do we need to bring in a new reason? Remember, we gave a reason beforehand. If someone's a child, they can't testify on something that happened to them as a child, even once they're an adult. Why didn't we give that reason? So the Gemara says, because we had two reasons to give. Chada v'okamerle. Chada, number one, you had two strikes against you. To cut on Ayisa, one, this occurred to you when you were a child. Number two, va'od afilu gadol ha'yisa imavin raim namat. If you were a gadol, we don't bring a proof from the guy who is permissible in this case. And that brings us, Rabosai, to a new Mishnah. So let's catch our breaths. I need to catch my breath at least. And let me pause. Were there anything I could clarify on that piece of Gemara? That was just wrapping up from last time, but important that we understand it. Okay, so we learned two important principles. One is, Eimavin Raimin Akatan, Eimavin Raimin Hamatir. We don't bring proofs from a child, and we don't bring proofs either from the permissible opinion. Okay, here we go. You know, it's like, I mean, I'll just pause for a moment. You see this in halacha a lot. For instance, this isn't exactly what the Gemara is saying, but maybe it's in the spirit of it. You know, there's certain rabbis who are, I guess, like myself, many times, who are inclined to be makel, who are inclined to rule leniently if they can find an opinion that supports it. And there are certain rabbis who are inclined to rule lechumra very stringently on matters. So if you hear a rabbi who's generally very machmir, very stringent about something, take a lenient position, then you know he's not just being lenient because he wants to be makel, but he's doing so because he really believes that that is the case. It works vice versa as well. And this is, you know, what worked with someone like Rav Moshe Feinstein, even though we didn't accept it. You know, the same Rav Moshe Feinstein who permitted us to drink Chalav Stam, the same Rav Moshe, you know, he was also the one who said the Manhattan Erev is invalid. He's the same one who had issue with clutch with timers on Shabbos. So, you know, as long as you're not leaning fully Lechumra one way or fully Lekula the other way, so then you are probably doing things honestly. Okay, moving on to a new Mishnah. This Mishnah is going to describe a particular list of mitzvos that are supposed to be performed during the daytime. Here we go. Ein Kornas Megillah. Well, example number one is how we get into it, is Megillah needs to be read during the daytime, not just during the nighttime, but during the daytime as well. And once we mention Megillah, we mention other mitzvos that are done during the day. V'lo Mullin, V'lo Tovlin, V'lo Mazin. We don't do a bris milah, right? A bris is done in the morning, because you ever wonder if we're supposed to do zrizin magdim lemitzos? We're supposed to do the bris as soon as possible. Why don't we just do it? The halakhic day starts at night. Why not do it during at night as soon as possible? Do it right after Maariv. So the reason is it needs to be done during the daytime. Why, you ask? The Gemara will explain. Similarly, someone who is a zav or someone who became ritually impure by contact with a dead body and needs to go to the mikvah, v'lomazin, also for someone who part of the ritual is getting the sprinklings from the red heifer, from the parah aduma, v'chein shomeris yom keneged yom. Okay, we're going to have to pause just for a quick moment and explain what shomeris yom keneged yom is. Very quick overview. Wow, how do I do this quickly? That's the question. So we may be familiar with something called a nida. A nida is when a woman menstruates and she becomes a certain form of tuma. It has two practical ramifications. One is she becomes ritually impure. We don't really focus on that today because we don't have a base on mikdash. But the other part that's a little bit, hopefully a little bit more famous, is that she can't have intimate relations with her husband when she is a nida. So actually, the nidas that we have today, we treat them as zavos. So there's basically this idea that there's 7 days when she is a nida, and then she becomes tahor at the end. And then for 11 days afterwards, the way you remember it is 7-11. That's always the joke when you learn it in Yoredeya, is that for 11 days, if she sees blood, so then it's unnatural. A woman, after her period, after 7 days, she should no longer, I mean, even before 7 days, but certainly after 7 days, she should no longer be seeing menstrual blood. So if she sees menstrual, well, the question is if it's really menstrual blood. If she's seeing blood during 11 days afterwards, so then if she sees for 1 day or 2 days, she's what we call Shomeris Yom Keneged Yom. It means she just counts that day and then goes to the mikvah the next day. I'll just explain. Then there's something called a Zava Gedola, which is a woman who sees it 3 times. So then she needs to wait what's called Shiva Nikiyim, 7 clean days. And that's how we regard women who are Nidas nowadays. Women who become Nidas nowadays, when they get their period, so they actually have to have what's called Shiva Nikiyim. It's not just waiting 7 days and then going to mikvah, but it's making sure for 7 consecutive days you are not seeing menstrual blood. And women will, get bedikos. And there's, of course, so much to elaborate upon it. For our purposes, it's what's called a Shomeris Yom Keneged Yom. If a woman sees blood during the 11 days, so then if she sees for only 1 day, she doesn't have to wait 7 extra days. She just has to wait 1 additional day. And then the next day she goes to mikvah and she becomes tahora. That's called Shomeris Yom Keneged Yom. Literally, she guards a day corresponding to the day that she was tamei. Okay? I'm happy to, I want to make sure that's clear because we're actually going to elaborate on that a little bit in the Gemara. So if I can define that term better, just now is a good time for that. So Shomeris Yom Keneged Yom, we know what it means. I'm going to be referring to that. Okay. So Shomeris Yom Keneged Yom. So all these different people, so Lo Sifa Atcha Neitz Hachama. So all these different mitzvos are not done until Neitz Hachama. Okay. A little bit more background, but this is a little bit less esoteric, I guess I would say. This comes up more frequently for men as well, which is Zmanim. So you know what I'm going to do, actually? I never do this during a shir, for Gemara at least, but we are going to screen share, guys, right? When's the last time we ever did that during a Gemara shir? This is, it's like I feel like I'm taking you on a field trip. So here is just a typical My Zmanim website. And if you ever wonder how we determine when davening is, well, thankfully there's some really great mathematical halakhic geniuses who put it all together for us. So if you look over here, there's really 2 main stages to focus on for the morning. There's what's called Alos HaShachar, which is dawn. Right, so you see I'm highlighting here, Alos HaShachar dawn, and then a little bit after, so today was 5:03 and 29 seconds, and then a little bit later, a little over an hour later, we have Neitz HaChama, which is sunrise. So dawn is the first, the crack of dawn, is the first rays of light, and Neitz HaChama is when the sun begins to peak above the horizon. And everyone debates precisely how to measure that. And that's very much beyond the scope of our discussion here. So the question is, so this is what the Mishnah is telling us. The Mishnah is telling us that ideally, lichat chila, any mitzvah needs to be done in the daytime. We don't do it, you can't do it as early as 5:03 in the morning on a day like this, but you'd have to wait till Neitz HaChama, till sunrise at 6:27 and 47 seconds. When we put the Zmanim down, we just round up to 6:28. So the reason for that is actually pretty straightforward. Back in the day, they didn't have a My Zmanim website, which gave you the precise time. Everyone had to look up at the sky and figure it out themselves. So because people might miscalculate when dawn is, we wait till sunrise for these mitzvos. For instance, Shemona Esrei. You ever hear of a Neitz Minyan? So a Neitz Minyan is you daven Shemona Esrei at sunrise. You put your tits and tefillin on earlier, and then at sunrise you get to Shemona Esrei. However, if someone is, let's say, I've had shilas that were brought to me about someone had an early morning surgery, and they would have to daven by Alos HaShachar. They were basically already checking into the hospital by Neitz HaChama. So in a situation where you have no other choice, then you can actually daven as early as Alos HaShachar, okay, as dawn. So we got dawn and we got sunrise. We got Alos HaShachar and Nitzakama. So looking back in the Mishnah, what does that mean for us? So ideally, all these mitzvahs that are day bound should be done as late as Nitzakama. But b'di'eved, if for whatever extenuating circumstances or you didn't realize and you accidentally did it before sunrise, don't worry, as long as it was after Alos HaShachar, it was after dawn, that is still considered daytime me'ikar hadin. Okay. Anything I can help clear up in terms of the zmanim? I know it looks technical, but it affects so many, as you can see just from this Mishnah. We didn't even talk about davening in this Mishnah, but it affects so many mitzvahs. It's just good to have a general awareness of it. Okay. Here we go, Rabosai. Into the Gemara we go. So the Mishnah just tells us that all these mitzvahs, like a bris milah or megillah, need to be done during the daytime. But why do these mitzvahs have to be done during the daytime specifically as opposed to others? Where do we get such a qualification? So minola. Damar kra by yomim ha'ilim niskarven nasim bayom bayom im balayla lo. So it says hayomim. We've seen this pasuk invoked many times in the context of reading the Megillah. It talks about the days. Since the verse says days, we see that there is a specific requirement to lay in the Megillah during the daytime. I lay matihavi to yufta the Rabbi Shimon ben Levi. The Rabbi Shimon ben Levi chayev adam likros Megillah. But wait, didn't we learn back in the first parak, Yeshua ben Levi taught us that just like you read Megillah during the daytime, you're supposed to read it during the nighttime? So how could the Mishnah here be telling us only to read during the daytime? So very simple answer, Kikatani Adayom. What's the Mishnah telling me? Of course, there's an obligation rabbinically, Midr Abundant, to lay during the nighttime. But for the primary mitzvah of Megillah, Midivrei Kabbalah, of reading it during the daytime, which is the primary mitzvah, the question is, what is considered daytime? And the Mishnah is teaching me that for the daytime mitzvah, you should lay Megillah after Neitz HaChama. Good. Moving forward, what's the source that a bris mila needs to be done during the daytime? Lomalin, Tichsiv ubayom hashmini yimol. That's also pretty straightforward. It says, on the eighth day, you shall circumcise him. Good. Moving forward. V'lo tovlin v'lo mazin. V'siv v'hiza ha-tahor al-tamei v'yom hashvi. V'iskish tfila lehazaya. So if you remember, the Mishnah told us that someone who needs to immerse himself in the mikvah, let's say because he came in contact with a mace, with a someone who had passed away, and he gets sprinkled from the ashes of the para aduma of the red heifer. So how do I know that that needs to be done during the daytime? Well, for the sprinkling, it says explicitly that it should be done by Yom Hashvi. And then if you look at the rest of the pasuk, I'll save you the trouble. The rest of the pasuk says, V'chibes begadav, it talks about, at the end of that pasuk, washing oneself, referring to the mikvah. So this is what we call a hekish, that since the topic of going to mikvah and the topic of sprinkling of the ashes of Paraduma are in the same pasuk, in the same commandment, they share similar parameters. The same way the sprinkling is done during the daytime, so too the immersion in the mikvah needs to be done during the daytime as well, even though it doesn't say it explicitly pertaining to the mikvah. But that's just, rabbinic hermeneutics 102. Okay.
But why would you think that when women use the mikvah, it's always at night?
Yeah, very good. So talk in particular about Nida. There was a general concern of going during the daytime. The reason of going during the daytime was a concern is because you need to go after the seventh day. You need to go, it's called, I think, Srach Bita, if I remember the terminology correctly. So if a young girl sees her mother going to mikvah, knows she's going to mikvah during the daytime, she'll mistakenly assume that you can go to mikvah on the day, on the seventh day, whereas she's only allowed to go on the eighth day. Therefore, we do it during the night of the eighth at the beginning, so that way there's no confusion. Now, the funny assumption in there, I'll digress just briefly, is that there's like this assumption that the daughter knows when her mother's going to mikvah. Things became more secretive over time, but remember how we were talking about that when it comes to the laws of Nida, there are two ramifications. One is about the husband and wife marital intimacy, but then there's another dimension of Tumah v'Tahara, that she could render people and things ritually impure. So back in the day, women wore special clothing when they were a Nida. You knew when a woman was a Nida. Nowadays, it's become a lot more secretive. And it's not a 21st, 20th century invention. The Rama already talks about the importance of tznius when going to the mikvah, that others shouldn't see them. As I said, I'm digressing a little bit, but excellent point, Phyllis. But you know what? Not Nida per se, but Zava Katana we're going to talk about, which different a little bit, but it'll relate to that topic. So
can I ask another question going back to the beginning of the Gemara?
Yeah.
So it seems to say that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said you should read at night and again in the day, and they refute that. That's not the halacha. So where did the nighttime laning come in?
Very good. So we do accept Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. The thing is, this is the general consensus, is that since in the Megillah, it only says the word yamim, so there's like different levels of commandments, right? We have what are called d'oraisa and d'rabbana, biblical, rabbinical, that we're familiar with. There's a number of things that are kind of subliminal. They're not quite d'oraisa, but not as low as the d'rabbanan either. And it's what we call sometimes the divrei kabbalah, something that can be found in, not in the Torah, but found in Nach. So the Megillah seems to be indicating to us that there is an imperative to read the Megillah during the day. Whereas reading during the night is merely a standard rabbinical innovation. So the reason I think the Mishnah is, that's basically what we paskin. Does that address your point, or did I maybe not get? Okay. Very good. Any other questions? Okay, going forward, here we go. So this is the part that you need to hold cup for, that you need to just pay attention to. But don't worry, it's not particularly long. So here is the question. Remember in the Mishnah we said that when someone needs to use the mikvah, when someone needs to immerse themselves, needs to be tovel, we listed that as its own category. That tefillah for a person is done during the daytime in general. So the Gemara asks, if so, b'chein shomeres yom keneged yom lo sipla shnitzachama pshita ma'ishna shomeres yom keneged yom mikol chayvei tefillos. If you're telling me that by default you need to immerse during the daytime in general to remove tuma, why did the Mishnah need to single out a shomeres yom keneged yom? I would assume by default, the same way for a Zav, for Tamei Meis, he needs to immerse himself during the daytime. So too, a woman who Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom would need to as well. So the answer is that it would not have been as obvious to me. I would have thought this was an exception to the rule that actually she could be Toveles at nighttime beforehand. Now, why would I have such a Havamina? What would make me think that Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom is unique, that she could be Tovelas the night beforehand? So admittedly, this was a little hard to follow when I read it the first time around, but I'll try to explain as best I can. It's Drich. Sal Kadaitach Amina Tihavi Kriya Rishona Shel Zav. So I would say it's similar to when a Zav first sees an emission. So there's something called a Balkeri, that's just a man who has a standard seminal emission. There's something called a Zav, which is not quite a seminal emission. It's kind of unnatural. There's all sorts of theories, means what's called gonorrhea, and all sorts of different theories of what exactly it is. But similar to how a woman can have an unnatural menstrual emission, so this is the male version of it. A man can have an unnatural seminal emission. Uriah Rishon Shel Zav Iskish Shel Bal Keri, and a Zav is, again, a Hekish, is connected, has the same parameters as a Bal Keri. Tichsib Zos Taras HaZav Asher Tetsi Meno Shechvas Zera. Ma Bal Keri Tovo Bayom, Hainami Litful Biyome. Just as a Bal Keri, a man who just has experiences a standard seminal emission, he literally that day can go to mikvah, and then by the evening, he is tahor once more. So too for a zav. Bahabi Yamama lo matzi tabla. However, when it comes to a zava kitana, a woman who shomer siyom kinegiyom, who sees, has an unnatural emission one time. So I wouldn't go as far as to suggest that just like a zav, on that very day, he could immediately go to mikvah and be tahor by the evening. I can't go, I wouldn't go that far for a shomer siyom keneged yom. Why? Dixiv, koyme zova kimishkav nidasa yehela. So yehela means that she needs to count. Belaila mihas liavid miksashimor v'titbol. So I would think, you know what? Maybe she doesn't need to wait till the next day. So let's say Sunday, she sees the that menstrual emission. So then she is Toveles on Monday. So what we're suggesting is maybe Sunday night already, she should be able to go to the mikvah. Now, we wouldn't suggest that already on Sunday daytime she could go, because the Torah tells us she needs to kind of, she needs to count that day. So she needs to wait till the end of the day, wait a little bit into the evening, and then she could go to mikvah. Why does she need to wait all the way until the next day? So Kamash Milan came into Dubai, Svira, since she needs to count, Svira b'yamamahi. You don't count nights, you count days. How do we know that? If you look at Rashi on the top of Chafam Beis, who suffer Allah Shivas Yamim, it says, and she will count 7 days. So therefore, what the Gemara is telling us is, I would have thought that maybe a Shomer Siyom Keneged Yom could be Tovelis the evening after she has her menstrual emission. Kamash Milan, she has to wait until the next day afterwards, excuse me, because she needs to count, and so she needs to count a full day, and she waits till the next day. Okay. Very good. That was the hard part. Head still spinning? Okay. This part gets back to the Zmanin. So, Ukula Shosmi Shalmana Shachar Kasher. Remember how we learned that as long as, you know, you do something, as long as it's after Alosa Shachar, it's after dawn, even if you didn't wait until sunrise, that's sufficient. So, Mina Hani Mili, where do we get this idea? How do we know that the beginning of the day is at dawn? Because what did we learn? Really, in principle, daytime starts at dawn, and nighttime is when three stars come out, Seisa Kochavim. So, how do I know that really the daytime starts at dawn? Maybe the real star of daytime should be when the sun rises, Neitzachama. Mina Hani Mili. Amarava Damar Krava Yikra Lahim Laor Yom Lemeir Uba Karu Yom. So that indicates that when light is starting to be caused, that is when daytime begins. Meaning you don't have to wait till the sun comes out, but once the light starts coming up, which is dawn, that's Alos HaShachar, that's when daytime begins. The issue with trying to bring a proof from this pasuk in Bereishis is Elamehata Lochosha Kara Laila Lamashik Uba Kara Laila Hakaimala Datsisa Gochavin Lab Lailahu. Wait a minute. But then if you read the continuation of the pasuk, if you read that darkness should be referring to when is nighttime, when it starts to get dark, when does it start to get dark? Shkia, sun, when it's the sun begins to set. But we don't say Shkia is the beginning of night. We say definite night is Seisa Kochavim, when three stars are out. That's later. there's different opinions on how long Tzitzit Chacham is. Let's say 13 and a half minutes to pick a minimum shear or Karafayim. So that's not a good proof, because if I darshan that pasuk, it would imply that nighttime begins at sunset, not when three stars come out, which is later. So we need a different proof for how we know that the bookends to the day are dawn and Tzitzit Chacham and three stars. El Rabbi Zer Mehacha, here's my proof. And this is a much cleaner proof. Now, albeit it's not a proof directly from the Torah, it's from Nach instead. It's coming from, what's it, Nehemiah? Coming from, yeah, Nehemiah. Okay. V'anachnu osim alacha, v'chetzia machzikim arachayim, me'alos ha-shachar atzeis ha-gochavim. So these people are describing the work that they're doing. Half of them were holding spears, and they worked from, it uses these terms explicitly, from, they want to basically say we work from the beginning of the day to the end of the day. So what are the terms they use? From Alos HaShachar, from the beginning of dawn until three stars come out. The Omer, Bahayilanu Halayla Mishmar, and we guarded during the night we guarded. So my Omer, why do I need this additional pasuk? I would say this isn't a halakhic proof. These guys are just describing their working hours. You know, if someone gets to work at, 4 a.m. in the morning and stays till 2 a.m. in the morning. That's like my brother-in-law, he's a lawyer at Debevoise. So, he works like these crazy hours. He would get home at like 1 a.m., 2 a.m. in the morning, and that was the norm. At least they were kind enough to send him home in a taxi or an Uber at that point. Especially with the subway situation in Manhattan, they come up in Lahark. I'll just grab this one idea. Okay. We're about to hit the mission. I'll take your point, Phyllis. Sure. So, Tashima, Bahayalano Halayla Mishmar Bayom Malacha. So, it's to teach us that it's not simply their working hours, but these were the standard hours that was considered morning and evening. So now we have a proof from Tanakh that the morning begins at dawn and the evening the nighttime starts at Tzitzit Chacham when three stars are out. There you go. Okay, Phyllis.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is when we get up in the morning and we see the sun come up, it's already actually not the middle of the day, but we're toward the middle of the day.
Well, I wouldn't
by
say
that point.
Middle,
I mean,
but we're already into the day.
We're into the day. It's so strange because our day starts at night. It's It's like something is off here. I know Vayihi Erev, Vayihi Boker, but it doesn't fit with what your eyes see and what you're used to saying, good morning, that's the start of a new day. Because it's not the start of the day.
Yeah, it's a little counterintuitive. That's a good point. Okay. I wanted to share, let's see, we have time for Tosafos. Okay. We'll do Tosafos, we have time. There's one idea from Elchana Wasserman I wanted to share. So this over here, I'm sure I've shared before, is Kovei Shiurim. So Kovei Shiurim, this is considered, one of the most, popular is a bad term for it, but it's one of the most revered Sfarim when it comes to Lumdus, when it comes to really analyzing halakhic concepts in the Olam HaYeshivas in the Yeshiva world. So Rav Elchanan Wasserman, anyone know who he was a student of? We've heard of the Chafetz Chaim, right? So Chafetz Chaim wasn't just like, this nice rabbi. He wrote like, don't speak Lashon Hara. I mean, first of all, you learn the Sefer Chafetz Chaim itself. You have to be a Talmid Chacham to write that. But you have to remember, Rav Shlomo Meir Kagan also wrote the Mishnah Berurah, the Ber Halacha, an incomparable Talmid Chacham. So a very important student of his was Rav Elchanan Wasserman. Unfortunately, Rav Chana Wasserman, actually, it's I don't want to say famous, more of an iconic story, that he was fundraising, I believe, for his yeshiva when he was in America, and then World War II broke out, or at least he heard, like, the World War II, I don't think broke out yet, but basically Jews were already being discriminated against, and things were looking very bad for the Jews in Germany, and it was already starting to become clear what direction it was heading in. So everyone begged him to stay in America to remain safe, but he said, my place is with my students, and he traveled back to Europe, and he actually perished in the concentration camps with his students. So it's he's like known for making such a sacrifice. In fact, you look really closely on the Sefer. It says, Nagon HaKadosh Rabbi Elchanan Bonim Wasserman Zecher Sako Shabratva, and Hashem Yikom Damav, that Hashem should avenge his blood because he was martyred in the Holocaust. So Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman, this is an important terminology to learn. Well, a number of important terms. Have we used the term chakira before? I'm sure we've used it. For lack of better translation, a chakira is essentially a dichotomy in halacha, when there's two different ways to look at something. So this chakira, you may have heard of gava versus chepsa. Okay. So the chakira that I want to share with you from Rav Chana Wasserman is called simen versus siba. And I'll illustrate it for you first, and then I'll show you what he wants to convey. Back in high school, when Hurricane Sandy hit Far Rockaway, so as you probably remember, it shut down everything. And Darkey was right by the water, so it got hit especially hard. So fast forward, what is maybe 3 weeks after the hurricane, they made it optional for people to start going back to yeshiva. Now, things were still not in full operation, and the food left much to be desired. So it was basically just like bread, and then, like, you know, here's some cream cheese and shmir naan. So I remember taking a piece of bread out, and I must have said it too loud. I was like, oh, it's a moldy piece of bread. And one of the base medrash bachrim, who was right nearby, he says, oh, it's a simen. I'm like, what do you mean it's a simen? He's like, It's not that the mold is be'etzem the problem. It's not that the mold is the siba, is the inherently what causes the bad thing. He wanted to conjecture that the mold isn't bad. It just indicates that the bread is bad. And I was like, no, I think the mold is the siba. I think, like, be'etzem, the mold itself is problematic. Don't eat mold. So he wanted to say there's nothing wrong with mold. It's a simen. It's just a sign that there's something wrong with the bread. I was saying the mold is inherently the problem. It's be'etzem. It's inherently problematic. So Rav Chana Wasserman asked a similar question about Seisa Kochavim. Is it that when there are three stars in the sky, that is what defines night? Or nighttime comes when nighttime comes. It's just that the presence of three stars is what indicates to me that it is nighttime. So what could be a nafkamina for that? Now, that is actually how he concludes. Now, what could be a nafkamina for that when it comes to testimony? Let's say we need witnesses to testify to us that it is nighttime. So let's say I have one pair of witnesses tell me they saw a star in, you know, that quadrant of the sky. And another pair of witnesses says they saw a star over there. Another pair of witnesses says they saw a star over there in that constellation. So between these three witnesses, I can add up that there are three stars in the sky and it's nighttime now. The issue is, this is called a chatzi edus. This is considered a deficient edus. Meaning, if the three stars themselves are the definition of nighttime, he says, then you need to give testimony on the complete case. In other words, imagine someone murders somebody, right? So two witnesses say, we saw him with a knife in his hand. The other two witnesses say, and we saw him when it was just about to hit so-and-so's body. And then another pair of witnesses say, we saw the knife sticking out of so-and-so's body. So, you know, it's not sufficient to piece together from all the witnesses that Reuven killed Shimon. You need one pair of witnesses to say that they saw Reuven take the knife and stick it into Shimon as one complete form of testimony.
What do they do on a cloudy night?
Right, exactly. It's night whether you see stars or not.
Exactly. Well, that's a good proof. But you want to see more creative proof, though? So at the end of the piece in Rav Elchanan, he gives a few proofs. He talks about Saros of Bar Mitzvah person, Gimel Shanim for Chazakos. We're not going to get into that. But what I really found amusing is at the end of his halachic proofs, he says, the Yesh Lahavi Raya Mimaisa Beratius. I can prove to you that you don't intrinsically need three stars from the creation story. Why? Da'kochavim Nivru B'yom Ravi, because the stars were created on the fourth day. Kasuv Vayhi Erev Vayhi Boker Yom Echad. But before the stars were even created, on day one, God already said, and it was evening and it was morning, one day. Alma to Esher Liyoslaya below Kochavim Kval. What we see from here is, even before day four, there was already a concept of day and night. So I don't need stars to prove that there is nighttime. So you don't have to worry. Once, billions and billions and billions of years in the future, once all these stars, either go supernova, they run out of fuel, everything gets sucked into black holes, don't worry. There'll still be some concept of nighttime, even if there's, the heat death of the universe. You know, once billions of years in the future, once everything runs out of fuel and all the black holes, will die because of Hawking radiation and there'll be nothing left. So there will still be nighttime because it's a simen, not a seam. Okay. See, we got a little bit of cosmology in there at the end as well. That was fun. Okay. Any questions or both say before we conclude? All right. I know Zmanim sound very technical, but they really affect so much of what we do because so many mitzvahs are time dependent. And always happy to discuss it further. All right, Shkayach, everyone. Have a wonderful evening and wishing you all a good Shabbos.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Shabbos, everybody.
Good Shabbos. Shabbat Shalom.